All right, welcome everyone. Today we're taking a deep dive into preaching, you know, how those sermons get crafted, like what goes on behind the scenes. We found some really cool academic writing on homiletics. Yeah, that's like the art of preaching, right? So we're going to try to give you the inside scoop.
It's a fascinating world, really ancient, but still so relevant to our lives today.
Absolutely. Get ready for some aha moments, everybody. We're going to uncover how preachers connect those, you know, ancient texts to modern lives, like how they use metaphors and even how memory shapes how we experience sermons.
You know, we hear sermons all the time, but we don't often think about where preachers like come from. It's not as simple as just going to seminary. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Like all the sources we read suggested it's more of a calling, right?
Yeah.
And there are like four key elements to this call.
Yeah. So the first one is the call to be a Christian. You know, that foundational commitment to following Jesus' teachings. But it goes deeper than that.
So that's like the starting point, the personal journey of faith. What comes next?
It's what they call the secret call, that inner nudge you feel, the feeling like you have something important to share. But of course, it takes more than just feeling it, you know?
Right. You need the skills too, right? Like it's one thing to feel passionate, but another thing to actually like communicate it effectively.
Exactly. And that's where what they call the providential call comes in, right?
Right.
That's about having natural gifts and talents for preaching.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're a captivating storyteller, or maybe you just have a knack for like connecting with people.
So you've got the inner drive and you've got the talent, but there's still more to it, isn't there?
Right. The last element is what they call the ecclesiastical call. This is where the church community steps in. They recognize your gifts, they affirm them, and then they formally invite you into the role. It's this beautiful blend of personal conviction, recognition of your talent, and affirmation by the community.
Yeah.
A really powerful combination.
Yeah, so it's like not just an individual inspiration, but a collective process, right? This journey that unfolds within a community of faith.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And just like anything else, like learning to swim or playing an instrument, preaching is a practice. You don't become an expert just by like reading a book.
Yeah.
You have to do it, make mistakes, refine your approach.
And that's where like mentors and models come in, right? Learning from those who've already mastered the craft.
Absolutely. Think of the call and response tradition in Black churches. The congregation isn't just sitting there passively. They actively participate. They shape the sermon with their energy, their feedback. It's a real back and forth, a dynamic exchange.
It reminds me of how we see those teaching moments everywhere, not just in churches, you know, like those intense discussions in coffee shops or a really heartfelt conversation between friends. It's all a form of preaching in a way, right? When you pay attention, you see how people are constantly shaping each other's understanding.
And that brings us to like the purpose of a sermon. It's not about overwhelming you with tons of information. It's about landing on one impactful point, something you can take with you and apply to your life.
That's interesting. But doesn't focusing on just one point risk oversimplifying things? You know, I mean, the Bible's complex. There are layers of meaning, different interpretations.
Of course, every Bible passage has many possibilities, but a good sermon distills all those possibilities into one powerful message, exploring it in depth rather than breadth. The preacher thinks about what they're saying, the content, but also their intention. Are they trying to inspire, comfort, challenge, maybe all of the above? And ultimately, they're thinking about the impact they want to have on you, the listener.
So it's more than just conveying information. It's about crafting an experience, guiding the listener on this journey of understanding.
Exactly.
Okay, but how do they even begin to bridge that gap, you know, between these ancient texts and our lives today? That's a huge leap.
That's where hermeneutics comes in. It's the art of interpretation, that bridge between the Bible and today.
Okay, I'm listening. How does that actually work?
Imagine exploring a historical site. To really understand it, you got to understand the context, right? Who built it? What was it used for? What events happened there? Well, that's the world behind the text. It's the historical context that shapes our understanding.
So the preachers are kind of like detectives, uncovering those historical clues to unlock the meaning, right?
Right. But there's more. You also have to consider the world of the text itself. What kind of literature is it? Is it poetry, narrative, prophecy? Each one has its own way of communicating.
It's like learning the language of the text, like its grammar and vocabulary.
Exactly. And then finally, we come to the world in front of the text. And that's your world. It's the listener's world. How does this ancient text speak to you today? What challenges or insights does it offer for your life?
Remember that whole debate about anointing with oil? That guy who insisted we have to follow every command in the Bible literally? Well, Except for the one about greeting each other with a holy kiss, of course. It just shows how our own context, that world in front of the text, shapes how we interpret things.
It sure does. And that's why it's so important to be aware of the potential pitfalls in interpreting scripture.
Oh yeah, there must be a lot of those. What are some of the common traps preachers try to avoid?
Ernest Best, he highlights three, but the one I think is super relevant for our discussion is the danger of, turning the Bible into a rule book. It's tempting to cherry-pick verses to justify conclusions you've already made, but that misses the bigger picture,
Right.
The overarching story that unfolds through the whole Bible.
So it's more about understanding the context, the spirit of the message, than taking everything literally.
Exactly. And that's where metaphors come in. They help us grasp those complex ideas and connect them to our lives. Think of it this way. You've got the vehicle, which is like the image or concept you're using to explain something. And then you've got the tenor, which is the actual thing you're trying to illuminate.
Okay, give me a concrete example. I'm getting a little lost in the terminology.
Sure. Let's say you're talking about forgiveness and you use the metaphor washing away sins. The washing away is the vehicle, the image that helps us understand the tenor, which is forgiveness.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. It's like using word pictures, creating an experience for the listener rather than just explaining an idea.
And metaphors, they don't just transfer meaning. They actually shape how we understand things. It's powerful stuff.
It is. And speaking of powerful, one of the most compelling metaphors we came across is the idea of scripture as a witness.
Yes.
A witness, like in a courtroom. How does that apply to scripture?
Think of scripture as a testament to God's actions throughout history. It's a record of God interacting with humanity, an ongoing story. And the scriptures themselves are presented as bearing witness to this story.
So it's not just a bunch of rules or stories, but this living account of God's presence in the world, experienced and passed down through generations.
Exactly. And the preacher becomes a witness too,
Yeah.
They're attesting to the truths they've encountered in those texts, sharing their understanding and experiences. It's about both beholding, which means really encountering and understanding the message, and then declaring, which is sharing it with others in a way that makes it come alive.
Wow, that is a powerful image. It reminds me of this one time I got called as an expert witness in a court case.
Really?
Yeah. It was a dispute over a guy's signature. I had witnessed him sign something years earlier and had to testify. It was kind of nerve-wracking, but I realized my role was just to report what I saw, to be a faithful witness to the truth. Turns out it wasn't nearly as dramatic as I thought it would be, in and out in like 5 minutes, but it really highlighted the importance of observing carefully, remembering accurately, and reporting truthfully, all essential for being a reliable witness.
And that's not so different from what a preacher does, right?
Yeah.
They're bearing witness to the truth they found in the scriptures.
Right. It's like being a relay runner, passing the torch of faith from one generation to the next. And when you think about it, it's like being a witness to something amazing. You can't help but share it, right?
Exactly. There were two other metaphors that I found really helpful for understanding how sermons connect with listeners. Fusion and window.
I get the fusion one, like two things coming together to create something new. But window feels a bit abstract. Can you, give an example? How do different interpretations shed light on the same text?
Think of a stained glass window, right? Each piece of glass is beautiful on its own, but when you put them all together, they create a much more complex, nuanced image. Similarly, different interpretations can highlight different aspects of a text's meaning, contributing to a richer understanding of the whole.
Okay, I see how those metaphors work, but let's get practical. How does a preacher actually craft a sermon? Where do they even start?
It all starts with a focus statement. This is the clear, concise, theological message they want to get across. It's the heart of the matter, the one key takeaway for the listener.
It's like a thesis statement, right? The central argument.
Exactly. And then there's the function statement, which is about the desired effect on the listener. Do they want the listener to feel encouraged, challenged, inspired to action?
So it's not just about information. It's about having a tangible impact, provoking a response.
Right. Now, some preachers use a slightly different approach. They focus on a core affirmation. This is a single, powerful sentence that links God's actions to the listener's life.
Ooh, I love a good punchy sentence. Can you give an example?
Sure. Let's take Mark 2:1-12, the story of Jesus healing a paralyzed man. A core affirmation could be, because God works through the faith of others, we are able to embrace their faith as avenues of God's action in our lives.
Wow, that's powerful. It takes that ancient story and makes it so relevant. It reminds us we can be instruments of God's healing power.
Exactly. And here's the beauty of it. That same text, Mark 2:1-12, can yield multiple sermons, each with a different core affirmation or function statement. Another sermon from that passage could be, because God challenges our settled ideas of how God works, we are invited to make way for life-changing divine interventions among us.
It's like a diamond with all these different facets reflecting different aspects of the truth.
That's a great way to put it. And once the preacher has their core message, they have to figure out how to present it. They have to plot the sermon, just like a good story.
Ah, this is where the storytelling comes in. I love a good narrative arc. What are the different approaches?
There are two main ones, the mode of immediacy and the mode of reflection.
I'm sensing a theme here. Break it down for me.
So the mode of immediacy follows the sequence of the biblical text. It's like taking the listener on a journey through the story, step by step. You visit each landmark in chronological order, experiencing the story as it unfolds.
So you're immersing the listener in the narrative flow.
Right. Now, the mode of reflection takes a theme and explores it from different angles. It's like choosing a color and then exploring all the shades and variations within that color. You're diving deep into a specific concept.
So it's a more thematic and analytical approach.
Right.
Inviting the listener to explore different layers of meaning.
Exactly. And just like choosing a playlist with a specific mood, the way a preacher plots their sermon shapes your experience. It guides your emotional and intellectual journey.
That's fascinating. It's like composing a symphony, carefully orchestrating the flow and the impact.
That's a great analogy. And speaking of crafting an experience, one technique preachers use is called episodic preaching. It's actually based on how our brains store memories.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about how that works.
Think about how you remember an event, like a birthday party. You remember the key moments, the highlights, not every single detail. Well, episodic preaching does the same thing. It presents the sermon as a series of interconnected episodes, highlighting key ideas in a way that makes them stick with you.
So it's about creating a mental highlight reel, focusing on those impactful, memorable moments.
Exactly. And those episodes don't have to be in chronological order. They can jump around just like our memories do.
It's like those nonlinear films that jump back and forth in time. They reveal the story in a unique way.
You got it. It's a great way to keep the listener engaged and make the key points memorable. But there's a pitfall here. If those episodes aren't carefully connected, the sermon can feel fragmented, confusing.
It's a delicate balance, right? Creating memorable episodes while keeping that cohesive narrative flow. What are some techniques for doing that?
Clear transitions are crucial. They guide you through the narrative, help you see how the episodes connect and build on each other.
And to avoid information overload, it's important to use vivid language and imagery, right? Instead of just stating facts, the preacher has to paint pictures, create an experience that resonates.
You're exactly right. There's this technique called concretization, where you use concrete sensory details to help the listener experience the message, not just understand it.
I need a visual. Give me an example.
Okay, let's say the sermon is about transformation. Instead of just talking about it abstractly, the preacher might describe a caterpillar turning into a butterfly.
Mm.
You know, they could describe the colors of the wings, the feeling of the wind beneath its wings as it flies. That's concretization.
Wow, that's so much more powerful than just saying transformation is a process of change. It makes the concept come alive. You can connect with it emotionally.
And it allows the message to sink in deeper, to feel its truth, not just think about it.
But how do you balance those vivid episodes with the overall structure, the message of the sermon? It seems like a delicate dance.
It is. It's like composing a piece of music. You have individual notes, but they come together to create a melody, a harmony, a complete piece that has a beginning, middle, and end. And a well-crafted sermon, just like a piece of music, leaves you feeling satisfied, moved, maybe even a little transformed.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's about creating an experience that resonates on all those different levels, intellectually and emotionally. Now, all this talk about crafting sermons makes me think about, you know, preaching styles. I mean, not all preachers are the same, right?
Oh, of course not. There's such a diversity of styles out there, from the, you know, fiery, passionate preacher who gets everyone on their feet to the quieter, more thoughtful preacher who speaks with this gentle wisdom. I've seen preachers who use humor, music, even drama to connect with their audience.
Each style has its own strengths, right?
It's absolutely. The most important thing is authenticity. The preacher needs to be genuine, passionate about the message, and really connect with their listeners. It's like any art form. It has to come from a place of real inspiration, not just technique.
I completely agree. And that's why it's so important for preachers to keep learning and evolving. They have to be open to new ideas, new ways of connecting. It's about staying fresh, engaged.
Exactly. And one idea that I thought was really interesting is this concept of homiletical theology. It's about like stepping back and reflecting on the practice of preaching itself.
So not just delivering sermons, but thinking critically about how to make them more effective, relevant.
Yeah, it's about pushing boundaries, finding new ways to engage and inspire. And one of the most important things for effective preaching is what they call pastoral integrity.
Ah, so that's about aligning your words with your actions, right? Living out what you preach.
Exactly. It's about walking the walk, not just talking the talk. And it's also about being sensitive to the needs of your audience. Meeting people where they are, speaking to their hearts, not just their heads.
Which brings us to contextual preaching. You have to understand the social, cultural, even political context of your audience and tailor the message accordingly.
One of the sources we looked at actually listed a whole bunch of contextual factors, things like education levels, social status, ethnicity, age, gender, even marital status.
Wow, that's a lot to consider.
It is. It's about recognizing that everyone comes to a sermon with their own unique background experiences, and you have to meet them where they are.
And you also have to be sensitive to the, you know, the local theology of the congregation, right? Every church has its own unique culture, its own understanding of faith. How do preachers navigate all those different perspectives?
It's a delicate balance, that's for sure. It's about respecting those differences while staying true to the core message. It's about finding common ground, building bridges, speaking a language that resonates with everyone.
Speaking of connecting with listeners, one of the sources mentioned three universal concerns that people from all backgrounds, you know, wrestle with.
Ah, yes. The big questions, the existential stuff.
Give me the big three. I'm ready to dive into the deep end of human existence.
All right. So first we have transcendence, that longing to connect with something bigger than ourselves, a sense of awe and wonder at the mystery of life.
Like standing on a mountaintop, looking at the vastness of the universe and realizing how small you are, but also connected to something so much greater.
Exactly. And then there's community, that need for connection, for belonging, to feel loved and accepted. We're social creatures. We need relationships.
We need those deep bonds, those people who get us, make us feel seen and valued. It's about finding your tribe, your place in the world.
And then finally, we have significance, that desire to know your life matters, that you're making a difference, that longing to leave a mark, to contribute something meaningful.
It's about finding purpose, meaning beyond just our own individual experiences.
You got it. And preachers, they can tap into these universal concerns. When they connect their message to those deep human longings, it resonates on a really powerful level.
It's about addressing the heart, not just the head.
Exactly. And one of the best ways to do that is through stories. Stories have this power to transport us, to make us feel empathy, to help us see the world in new ways.
It's like that saying, people don't remember what you said, they remember how you made them feel. And stories have that power to evoke emotions, to leave a lasting impression.
And it's not just about using stories from the Bible either. Preachers can draw on stories from their own lives, history, literature, anything that helps illuminate the message and connects with the listener.
It's about making the message come alive, taking those abstract ideas and grounding them in real life, making them relatable.
And it's about inviting the listener to become part of the story, to see themselves reflected in it, to feel its relevance to their own lives.
I love that. It's about making the sermon an interactive experience, letting the listener participate in the unfolding of the message.
Exactly. So we've been unpacking this whole process of crafting a sermon. You know, the preacher's journey, the power of metaphors, and the techniques they use to bridge those ancient texts to, like, our modern world.
It's amazing how much goes into it. I mean, it's way more than just reading from a text, that's for sure.
Right. And one thing we haven't really touched on yet is how important it is to connect with the listener emotionally. You know, it's not just about giving them information. It's about moving them, inspiring them, challenging them to think differently.
Yeah, it's true. Information alone doesn't always lead to change. It takes that emotional connection, that spark of inspiration, to really get someone to, like, change their behavior.
Absolutely. And that's where storytelling comes in.
Yeah.
We as humans, we're wired for stories. They grab our attention, make us feel things, which makes the message way more memorable and powerful.
I've always loved stories. They transport you to different worlds, make you feel empathy for the characters. It's like you see the world through new eyes.
One of the sources we looked at described sermons as having, like, a plot.
Yeah.
Just like a novel or a film. There's this rising tension, a climax, and then a resolution. It's not just a lecture. It's a journey that takes the listener on an emotional ride.
Wait, a sermon with a plot? I never thought of it that way. So it's not just about conveying information. It's about creating an experience for the listener.
Exactly. Think of it like a roller coaster. You have highs and lows, twists and turns, you know, moments that keep you on the edge of your seat. A well-crafted sermon can do the same thing. You leave feeling energized, maybe even changed.
Love the analogy, but how do preachers actually structure their sermons to achieve that? Are there, like, techniques?
Oh yeah, tons of techniques. One technique is episodic preaching. It's actually based on how our brains form memories.
Okay, that's interesting. How does that work?
Well, think about how you remember a vacation, for example. You don't remember every little detail, right?
Right. It's more like snapshots, those key moments that stand out.
Exactly. Your brain creates this highlight reel of the most vivid, emotionally charged moments. And that's what episodic preaching does. It presents the sermon as a series of interconnected episodes, each one focusing on a key moment or idea. And these episodes, they don't have to be in chronological order either. They can jump around, just like our memories do.
So it's non-linear, like those movies that jump back and forth in time.
Exactly. It keeps the listener engaged and helps those key points stick in their memory. But there's a potential downside. You know, if those episodes aren't carefully connected, the sermon can feel fragmented and confusing.
Right. It's all about balance. How do preachers make sure those episodes connect and create a cohesive narrative?
That's where clear transitions come in. You know, a good preacher will use phrases, summaries to guide the listener. They help you see how each episode connects to the bigger message.
It's like weaving a tapestry, connecting those individual threads to create this beautiful, intricate whole.
That's a great way to put it.
But to avoid overwhelming the listener with too much information, it's also important to use vivid language, imagery, right? It's not just about stating facts, it's about painting pictures with your words.
Absolutely. That's where concretization comes in. Using those concrete sensory details to help the listener actually experience the message, not just intellectually grasp it.
Okay, I'm a visual learner. I need an example.
Okay, imagine you're preaching about grace. Instead of just defining it, you could tell a story about a time you experienced unexpected kindness or forgiveness, right? You could describe that feeling of relief, the weight lifting off your shoulders, that warmth spreading through you. That's concretization.
Wow, that's so much more powerful than just saying grace is unmerited favor. You feel it, you know? You connect with it on a visceral level.
And that's what makes the message stick.
Yeah.
It's about moving beyond just the head and touching the heart.
It sounds like there's a real artistry to preaching. It's not just about conveying information. It's about crafting this experience that resonates intellectually and emotionally.
It really is. It's like composing a piece of music. You have individual notes, right?
Yeah.
But they come together to create a melody. A harmony, a complete piece with a beginning, middle, and end. And a well-crafted sermon, just like a piece of music, leaves you feeling satisfied, moved, maybe even a little transformed.
That's beautifully said. Now, thinking about all this, it makes me wonder about the different styles of preaching. Because not all preachers are the same, right?
Oh, absolutely not. There's so much diversity out there. You have the, you know, fiery, passionate preacher who gets everyone on their feet. And then you have the quiet, contemplative preacher who speaks with his gentle wisdom. And everything in between. I've even seen preachers who use humor, music, even drama to connect with their audience.
Each style has its own strengths, I guess.
Exactly. But I think the most important thing, regardless of style, is authenticity.
Yeah.
The preacher has to be genuine, passionate about what they're saying, and truly connect with their listeners. It's like any art form. It has to come from a place of genuine inspiration, not just technique.
Couldn't agree more. And it's so important for preachers to keep learning and evolving, you know, be open to new ideas, new ways of connecting. It's about staying fresh, staying engaged.
Exactly. And one idea that really resonated with me is this concept of homiletical theology. It's about taking a step back and like reflecting on preaching itself.
So not just delivering sermons, but thinking critically about how to make them more effective, more relevant to people's lives.
Exactly. It's about pushing the boundaries, finding new ways to engage and inspire. And something that's really crucial for effective preaching is what they call pastoral integrity.
Ah, so that's about living what you preach, right? Aligning your words with your actions.
Exactly. It's about walking the walk, not just talking the talk. And it's also about being sensitive to your audience. Meeting them where they are, speaking to their hearts, not just their heads.
And that brings us to contextual preaching, right? Understanding the social, cultural, even political context of your audience and adapting the message accordingly.
One of the sources actually had this whole list of contextual factors, things like education level, social status, ethnicity, age, gender, even marital status.
Wow, that's a lot to keep in mind.
It is. But it highlights the fact that everyone comes to a sermon with a different background, different experiences. And the preacher needs to be aware of that.
So it's about meeting people where they are, speaking to their specific experiences and concerns.
Exactly. And being sensitive to the local theology of the congregation, you know. Every church has its own unique culture and understanding of faith, its own set of beliefs and practices.
That's fascinating. It's like every community has its own unique fingerprint when it comes to faith, these subtle variations in how they interpret and live out their beliefs. How do preachers balance those unique perspectives with the core message of their tradition?
It's a delicate balance, that's for sure. It's about respecting those differences while staying true to the core message, finding common ground, building bridges, and ultimately speaking a language that resonates with people's hearts and minds.
It sounds like contextual preaching requires a lot of empathy, cultural intelligence.
It really does. Now, one interesting thing our sources pointed out is that there are three universal concerns that people from all walks of life, all backgrounds, grapple with.
Ooh, okay. What are those universal concerns that connect us on such a deep level?
The first one is transcendence. That deep longing to connect with something bigger than ourselves, to experience awe and wonder at the mystery of life.
Like standing on a mountaintop, looking at the vastness of the universe, and feeling how small you are, but also connected to something much greater.
Exactly. And then there's community. That fundamental need for connection, for belonging, for love and acceptance. As humans, we're wired for relationships.
We need those deep bonds, those people who understand us, who make us feel seen and valued. It's about finding your tribe, your place in the world.
And the last one is significance. That desire to know that your life matters, that you're making a difference in the world. To leave a mark, to contribute something meaningful.
It's about finding purpose, meaning beyond just our own individual experiences.
You got it. And preachers, they can tap into those universal concerns. When they connect their message to those deep human longings, it resonates on a really powerful level.
It's about speaking to the heart, not just the head.
Precisely. And one of the most powerful ways to do that is through stories. Stories have that amazing ability to transport us, make us feel empathy, and help us see the world in new ways.
There's that quote, "People don't remember what you said, they remember how you made them feel." And stories, they have that power. They evoke emotions, create a lasting impression.
Absolutely. And it's not just about using stories from the Bible either. Preachers can draw on stories from their own lives, from history, literature, anything that illuminates the message and connects with the listener.
It's about bringing the message to life, grounding those abstract ideas in real-world experiences, making it relatable.
And it's about inviting the listener to become a part of that story, to see themselves reflected in it, to feel how relevant it is to their own lives.
I love that. It's about making the sermon interactive, letting the listener participate.
Exactly. And speaking of participation, you, the listener, play a crucial role in how effective a sermon is. It's not just about passive listening. It's about actively engaging.
That's interesting. So it's a two-way street. What are some ways listeners can actively engage and get the most out of a sermon?
Well, one way is to come to the sermon with an open mind and heart. Be ready to receive the message, even if it challenges your preconceived ideas. Another is to really listen attentively, not just to the words, but to the preacher's tone, their delivery, the emotions behind the message. Don't be afraid to take notes. Write down key points that resonate with you or any questions that come up.
So it's about being present, attentive, and actively participating in the whole experience.
Exactly. And then afterwards, take some time to reflect on the message. Think about how it applies to your life, what actions you might be inspired to take.
It's about taking ownership of the message and letting it shape your thoughts, your beliefs, and ultimately your actions.
That's it.
But how do preachers even know if their message is getting through? Is there any way to measure how effective a sermon is?
That's a great question. It's not always easy to gauge in the moment.
Yeah. You know,
sometimes those seeds planted during a sermon, they take time to grow. But there are some indicators preachers can look for.
Like what? What are some signs that the message is hitting the mark?
One is engagement. Are people listening? Are they nodding along, leaning in, taking notes? Are they asking questions, sharing their own thoughts and experiences? All those are good signs.
It's about reading the room, sensing that energy and responsiveness from the audience.
Yeah. Another indicator is impact. Are people talking about the sermon afterwards? Are they sharing it with others? Are they actually putting the message into action in their lives? That's how you know it had a real impact.
So it's not just about delivering a good speech. It's about inspiring real change.
Precisely. And sometimes that change, it happens gradually over time. A sermon might plant a seed that takes weeks, months, even years to fully blossom.
It's like a ripple effect that impacts spreading outward.
That's a great way to put it. And speaking of ripples, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, haven't we? We've explored the preacher's journey, the art of crafting a sermon, the power of stories, the importance of context, engagement. It's been quite a journey.
Yeah. We've even talked about the limitations of preaching, acknowledging that it's not some magic formula, but an invitation to deeper understanding, a more meaningful life.
And that's a perfect segue into our final part. Mm-hmm. We're going to explore what all of this means for you, the listener, how to be a more discerning listener, how to apply these insights to your own life.
Sounds like a great way to wrap up our exploration of preaching. Welcome back. So in this deep dive into preaching, we've explored where preachers come from, how they craft those sermons, and even how our brains process those messages.
Yeah, we've covered a lot. The power of metaphors, the importance of context, the preacher as a witness, you know.
But as you mentioned earlier, preaching isn't magic. It's not a guaranteed formula for transformation.
Right. And one of the things our sources emphasized is that preaching has its limits. Mm-hmm. You know, people have free will. They can choose to resist the message, ignore it, even if it's delivered perfectly. It's not about manipulating people, forcing them to believe. It's more about offering an invitation, planting seeds, and trusting that, well, something bigger is at work.
So it's a partnership, you know? The preacher, the listener, and something beyond.
Exactly. Yeah. And realizing that can actually be liberating for preachers. It takes the pressure off, right? They don't have to convert everyone. They just have to be a faithful witness, share their understanding, their experience, humbly and honestly.
It's about surrendering to the mystery of faith, trusting that, you know, things are happening even if we can't see them.
That's it. And this brings us back to you, the listener. Now that you've peeked behind the curtain, so to speak, and seen how sermons are crafted, you know, pay attention to what you hear. Notice those metaphors that stick with you, the stories that move you, the connections you make between the text and your own life.
It's like we've given you a decoder ring. Now you can see the artistry, the intentionality, the heart behind it all.
Exactly. And as you listen, ask yourself, what is this sermon inviting me to believe? How is it challenging me to grow? What action, if any, is it inspiring me to take?
Because at the end of the day, it's not just about listening passively. It's about letting those messages shape you, you know, your thoughts, your actions.
It really is.
You might even find yourself wanting to step into that teaching moment, share your own insights and experiences, become a witness yourself.
That's the beauty of it.
So there you have it, a peek into the world of preaching. It's not just about those old words. It's about connecting them to our lives, to our hopes and struggles, and making them come alive.
It really is. Happy listening, everyone. May your deep dives always be insightful and, well, inspiring.
And may your sermons always be engaging, thought-provoking, and maybe even a little bit transformative. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. Until next time.